Part of what makes us a vibrant spiritual community is also our dedication to prayer and wanting to support you on your journey in prayer. So know that we have prayer chaplains available after the service. We have a prayer box where you can put your prayer requests. And we also have an option for you to receive a prayer letter of support. We are so anchored in prayer here at Unity Renaissance. And so I invite you at this time, if you feel comfortable, to close your eyes. Just allow your heart space to open. And as your heart space opens, acknowledge for yourself that within you is the creative process, the loving creator wanting and desiring to express through you, that the wisdom and the strength, the enthusiasm that you display, that's all being co-created by you and spirit. And today, as we listen to Eddie's message, we allow our hearts to open even more, because within that message is a personal, wonderful nugget of inspiration for us to use and to recall as we go through our week. And so I affirm with each of you that we are just one big prayer circle here today, opening our hearts and sending out love and joy to the world. For we know, without a doubt, that the law of good is always in operation in our lives. And for that, we are grateful. And so it is. Amen.
Peace. Once upon a time, I believed that the moon was made of cheese. What a silly belief. Silly, but of no consequence. Over the years, I would come to learn that some beliefs do have consequences, even lasting consequences. Our early encounters with less than perfect family, teachers, and other caregivers provide ample opportunity for us to make meaning out of everyday interactions. And from the meaning that we create, our beliefs are formed. From those beliefs, we can adopt some strange rules for navigating everyday life. Perhaps you know someone who lives by one of these rules. Don't ask for much. There's not enough. Don't get too close to people. Especially if they love you, they can hurt you the most. Don't reveal your feelings. People can use that against you. And don't get too carried away with getting your heart's desire. It's more important to get approval from people. Hardly the basis for joy, but rules are rules. As powerful as the beliefs are that underlie such rules, there is one belief that trumps all others. Silently, it becomes our internal operating system, which more than anything else colors how we show up in life. This pivotal belief determines our way of being with ourselves, being with others, and being with the spirit of life itself. The pivotal belief is this: who we believe we are. During my preschool years, I was so fortunate to spend a lot of time with my grandmother. Every morning, she prayed out loud for her 7 living children and the 2 who had died and gone to heaven. Going to heaven was a daily concern for my grandmother, the focus of her prayers. Prayers over, she would turn to me and say, "Now, Eddie, be a good boy." I heard that injunction hundreds of times. She didn't say it directly, but I knew exactly what she meant. If I were a good boy, I too would go to heaven. And let me tell you, having heard Preacher Coleman's sermons, I knew enough about hell to not take any chances. I became that good boy. I enjoyed confirmation of that identity. After 2 weeks of vacation Bible school, my teachers rubbed my crew-cut head as they assured my mom, "Mrs. Oliver, Eddie is such a good boy." I think that's when I started to get excited about going into first grade. I had visions of being the teacher's pet. She could choose none other than a good boy, and that would be me. Finally, the big day, first day of first grade. Uh-oh, I wasn't expecting that. Twins in my class, very cute twins, Tom and Charles, competition. I'd have to be on top of my game, for sure. Well, during the first week of school, our teacher, Mrs. Miller, gathered us in a circle, handed out the musical instruments. I proudly held a metal triangle and a metal rod. Following her lead, we six-year-olds played our little hearts out for about 10 seconds. She commanded us to stop. She glared at me. Her acrid voice pierced the silence. "What's wrong with you, Eddie? Don't you know that triangle should have a string?" Ugh. My knees buckled with shame. I'm not sure she said stupid, but I felt stupid and embarrassed and very small. And less time than it took to open my howdy doody lunchbox, I faced irrefutable proof that I was not a good boy. The gates to heaven were locked, and I had lost the key. Somehow, the triangle and the string were reunited. The band resumed under the watchful eye of Mrs. Miller. And me, I managed to soldier on. I tapped the triangle as gently as possible, hoping to avoid attention. I heard no music. All I could hear were my own reverberating words. Words of self-criticism, self-loathing, and self-condemnation. Long before the afternoon bell, I had a new story about myself, a new identity. I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. Trust that scampered into the front seat of the school bus that morning evaporated. Doubt sank into its place. Playfulness that skipped into the classroom was subdued by vigilance. And the innocence that proudly held the metal triangle bowed to fear. That day, my rules for living life were set. In order to survive, I must not be seen, I must not be heard, I must not be known. For surely, if anyone noticed me, they too would see that I'm not worthy, not good enough, not lovable. From that day on, I dare not try anything new, especially if it involved being the center of attention. I found solace under the radar, behind the scenes, and within the comforting cloak of anonymity. Decades later, I'd realize the awful truth. My survival strategy had unintended consequences. Safety had come at the cost of aliveness. I muddled in minutia. I became mired in the mundane. And perhaps, worst of all, somehow I unfriended joy. My grandmother didn't know it as the law of cause and effect, but she sure did talk about when the chickens come home to roost. So let's go there. Take a drink. Fast forward some 3 decades after the terrible triangle. It was at the initial parent-teacher conference when my daughter was in first grade. Mrs. Knight warmly welcomed us and extolled the virtues of our beloved daughter, Catherine. I nodded in comfortable agreement, grateful that the teacher seemed to know her well. Then she said, "Catherine is such a good classroom citizen, but what? What the heck is going on here? Isn't it obvious that Catherine is smart, creative, curious, but what?" Mrs. Knight went on. "Catherine is such a good classroom citizen, but she does not participate in class." Oh no, my daughter is afraid to be seen, afraid to be heard, or to be known. How I wish that apple had fallen further from the tree. Well, Father Time marched on, and nearing the half-century mark, my life could be summarized in a few words. I was loving my neighbor, my relationship, and my job just about as much as I was loving myself. And it took its toll. Sure enough, failed marriage, career in jeopardy, desperate emptiness, full-blown midlife crisis. I would soon understand that midlife crisis is a sure sign of longing to know God. The New Year's holiday found me wandering in a shopping mall, lonely in the midst of a bubbling crowd. I was about to lose it. I pleaded, "God, please let me out of here before the dam burst, the dam that was holding back years of unacknowledged sadness." I called a friend who listened for a while and then invited me to church. That Sunday, I attended Unity for the first time. He said. At the opening, the minister posed a simple question. "Do you know how loved you are?" The soloist took the microphone, and on the third or fourth note, her voice cracked. She froze. We held our breath. There was silence, and more silence as she seemed to look at every person in the congregation. Finally, she took a deep breath and said, "For a moment, I forgot that you love me." And then she blessed us with song. Without warning, somehow my protective shell began to soften. I was starting to see a new possibility. Maybe, just maybe, I am lovable. At some point during the hour, as evidenced by a nearby pile of soggy tissues, I think I started to love myself. And amazingly, I began to feel a bit loving. I think I even hugged someone. Okay, it was an air hug, but still a hug. But the ego said, "Not so fast, Eddie. What about all those wasted years? The injustice, the pain, the suffering. You can't just let that go. You've got to wallow in self-pity. You've got to blame someone." That may sound familiar. Now, get thee behind me, ego. Get thee behind me. I find great wisdom and hope in Myrtle Fillmore's words. She quotes a verse from Job. "I will restore to you the years which the swarming locust has eaten," saith Jehovah. And she reminds us that what has been lost will be brought forth as present good just as rapidly as we grow in consciousness. For God is ever giving just what we expect. So what do we expect? We can expect only what we believe, no more. So this then is the spiritual law. God is ever giving just what we believe. And like the natural law of gravity, this spiritual law operates all the time for everyone equally, whether we want it to or not. And therein lies the problem. You may not be surprised to learn that my childhood hero was the Lone Ranger. The Masked Man, the beautiful stallion, faithful sidekick, Tonto. He rode into town, saved the day, leaving only a hint of who he was, that silver bullet. Well, one story about them lives on. The Lone Ranger and Tonto are camping in the desert. They pitch their tent, fall asleep, and some hours later, Tonto wakes his friend. "Kemosabe, look up. What do you see?" He replies, "I see thousands of stars." "Kemosabe, what does that mean?" "Well, Tonto, it means that there are hundreds of galaxies. It means that Saturn is in Leo. It means that it's about 3:15, anti-meridian. It means that God is all-powerful." "What does it mean to you, Tonto?" "Kemosabe, it means someone stole our tent." We humans, you see, are meaning-making creatures. We experience an interaction, and from our beliefs, we conjure up meaning, often to our detriment. As we live into that meaning, our beliefs solidify. Then the law does what the law does. It works to fulfill our beliefs. So I want to give you a scenario. This is about an anonymous third person. I'm going to use the name you, not you, you, but some other you. Just makes it easier to tell. Maybe somebody walks by you in the narthex without speaking, without smiling, without even looking at you. You notice that. Then you do a dangerous thing. You think. And what you think is this: they don't like me. And of course, there's more. You interpret what just happened as something that they're doing to you. Then you misidentify your interpretation as your feelings. You confuse your thinking with your feelings. Your self-talk goes something like this. I feel ignored, I feel insulted, I feel rejected. This is code language for what your ego is shouting. They ignored you, they insulted you, they rejected you. You must retaliate now. So, automatically, you judge them. They're stuck up, self-centered, and rude. You become aware of increasing discomfort. So look at what is going on here. In the space of a few heartbeats, your ego has a new enemy to deal with. A convenient distraction to keep you from facing the real issue. So what is the real issue? Let's remember spiritual law. Because God is ever giving just what we believe, the real issue is your belief that you are not likable. Probably an unnoticed belief that has been affecting your interactions and relationships for a long time. Just take a deep breath, because there's some good news. Viktor Frankl reminds us, quote, between stimulus and response, there's a space. And that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and freedom. End of quote. So the person walking by without acknowledging you is the stimulus. What you make of that is your response. And the space in between lies your growth and freedom. Well, that sounds very promising. Well, there's bad news. This thing we call growth usually takes a while. Sometimes years of introspection, journaling, study, group work, spiritual practice, yoga, even therapy. Know anybody that's been working on their personal growth stuff for a while? Well, some good news. There is another way to freedom. It takes no longer than it takes for you to change your mind. Here is the way to freedom from John 8:32. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So I'll lay it out for you simply and directly. Beliefs are one thing, truth is another. We make up beliefs. Truth is absolute. So know this. The truth is, you are created in the image and likeness of God. You're already worthy. The truth is, God is good, so you're way good enough. The truth is, God is love. You are lovable and you're able to love. Jesus said it all. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Beliefs are subject to change. God is not. Truth is not. I wanted to share my story with you today so that you might understand the profound power of your story. The most important story ever told is the story that you tell yourself about who you are, who you believe you are. And if you aren't enjoying all the fruits of the kingdom, there's good news. It's never too late to change your story. Once upon a time, I believed that the moon was made of cheese. What a silly belief. Let us prepare for a few moments of quiet meditation. Peace. Once upon a time, I believed that the moon was made of cheese. What a silly belief. Silly, but of no consequence. Over the years, I would come to learn that some beliefs do have consequences, even lasting consequences. Our early encounters with less than perfect family, teachers, and other caregivers provide ample opportunity for us to make meaning out of everyday interactions. And from the meaning that we create, our beliefs are formed. From those beliefs, we can adopt some strange rules for navigating everyday life. Perhaps you know someone who lives by one of these rules. Don't ask for much. There's not enough. Don't get too close to people. Especially if they love you, they can hurt you the most. Don't reveal your feelings. People can use that against you. And don't get too carried away with getting your heart's desire. It's more important to get approval from people. Hardly the basis for joy, but rules are rules. As powerful as the beliefs are that underlie such rules, there is one belief that trumps all others. Silently, it becomes our internal operating system, which more than anything else colors how we show up in life. This pivotal belief determines our way of being with ourselves, being with others, and being with the spirit of life itself. The pivotal belief is this: who we believe we are. During my preschool years, I was so fortunate to spend a lot of time with my grandmother. Every morning, she prayed out loud for her 7 living children and the 2 who had died and gone to heaven. Going to heaven was a daily concern for my grandmother, the focus of her prayers. Prayers over, she would turn to me and say, "Now, Eddie, be a good boy." I heard that injunction hundreds of times. She didn't say it directly, but I knew exactly what she meant. If I were a good boy, I too would go to heaven. And let me tell you, having heard Preacher Coleman's sermons, I knew enough about hell to not take any chances. I became that good boy. I enjoyed confirmation of that identity. After 2 weeks of vacation Bible school, my teachers rubbed my crew-cut head as they assured my mom, "Mrs. Oliver, Eddie is such a good boy." I think that's when I started to get excited about going into first grade. I had visions of being the teacher's pet. She could choose none other than a good boy, and that would be me. Finally, the big day, first day of first grade. Uh-oh, I wasn't expecting that. Twins in my class, very cute twins, Tom and Charles, competition. I'd have to be on top of my game for sure. Well, during the first week of school, our teacher, Mrs. Miller, gathered us in a circle, handed out the musical instruments. I proudly held a metal triangle and a metal rod. Following her lead, we six-year-olds played our little hearts out for about 10 seconds. She commanded us to stop. She glared at me. Her acrid voice pierced the silence. "What's wrong with you, Eddie? Don't you know that triangle should have a string?" Ugh. My knees buckled with shame. I'm not sure she said stupid, but I felt stupid and embarrassed and very small. And less time than it took to open my howdy-doody lunchbox, I faced irrefutable proof that I was not a good boy. The gates to heaven were locked, and I had lost the key. Somehow, the triangle and the string were reunited. The band resumed under the watchful eye of Mrs. Miller. And me, I managed to soldier on. I tapped the triangle as gently as possible, hoping to avoid attention. I heard no music. All I could hear were my own reverberating words. Words of self-criticism, self-loathing, and self-condemnation. Long before the afternoon bell, I had a new story about myself, a new identity. I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. Trust that scampered into the front seat of the school bus that morning evaporated. Doubt sank into its place. Playfulness that skipped into the classroom was subdued by vigilance. And the innocence that proudly held the metal triangle bowed to fear. That day, my rules for living life were set. In order to survive, I must not be seen, I must not be heard, I must not be known. For surely, if anyone noticed me, they too would see that I'm not worthy, not good enough, not lovable. From that day on, I dare not try anything new, especially if it involved being the center of attention. I found solace under the radar, behind the scenes, and within the comforting cloak of anonymity. Decades later, I'd realize the awful truth. My survival strategy had unintended consequences. Safety had come at the cost of aliveness. I muddled in minutiae. I became mired in the mundane. And perhaps, worst of all, somehow I unfriended joy. My grandmother didn't know it as the law of cause and effect, but she sure did talk about when the chickens come home to roost. So let's go there. Take a drink. Fast forward some three decades after the terrible triangle. It was at the initial parent-teacher conference when my daughter was in first grade. Mrs. Miller, Mrs. Knight, warmly welcomed us and extolled the virtues of our beloved daughter, Catherine. I nodded in comfortable agreement, grateful that the teacher seemed to know her well. Then she said, "Catherine is such a good classroom citizen, but what? What the heck is going on here?" isn't it obvious that Catherine is smart, creative, curious, but what? Mrs. Knight went on. Catherine is such a good classroom citizen, but she does not participate in class. Oh no, my daughter is afraid to be seen, afraid to be heard, or to be known. How I wish that apple had fallen further from the tree. Well, Father Time marched on, and nearing the half-century mark, my life could be summarized in a few words. I was loving my neighbor, my relationship, and my job just about as much as I was loving myself. And it took its toll. Sure enough, failed marriage, career in jeopardy, desperate emptiness, full-blown midlife crisis. I would soon understand that midlife crisis is a sure sign of longing to know God. The New Year's holiday found me wandering in a shopping mall, lonely in the midst of a bubbling crowd. I was about to lose it. I pleaded, God, please let me out of here before the dam burst, the dam that was holding back years of unacknowledged sadness. I called a friend who listened for a while and then invited me to church. That Sunday, I attended Unity for the first time. He said. At the opening, the minister posed a simple question. Do you know how loved you are? The soloist took the microphone, and on the third or fourth note, her voice cracked. She froze. We held our breath. There was silence. And more silence as she seemed to look at every person in the congregation. Finally, she took a deep breath and said, for a moment, I forgot that you love me. And then she blessed us with song. Without warning, somehow my protective shell began to soften. I was starting to see a new possibility. Maybe, just maybe, I am lovable. At some point during the hour, as evidenced by a nearby pile of soggy tissues, I think I started to love myself. And amazingly, I began to feel a bit loving. I think I even hugged someone. Okay, it was an air hug, but still a hug. But the ego said, not so fast, Eddie. What about all those wasted years? The injustice, the pain, the suffering. You can't just let that go. You've got to wallow in self-pity. You've got to blame someone. That may sound familiar. Now, get thee behind me, ego. Get thee behind me. I find great wisdom and hope in Myrtle Fillmore's words. She quotes a verse from Job. I will restore to you the years which the swarming locust has eaten, saith Jehovah. And she reminds us that what has been lost will be brought forth as present good, just as rapidly as we grow in consciousness. For God is ever giving just what we expect. So what do we expect? We can expect only what we believe, no more. So this then is the spiritual law. God is ever giving just what we believe. And like the natural law of gravity, this spiritual law operates all the time for everyone equally, whether we want it to or not. And therein lies the problem. You may not be surprised to learn that my childhood hero was the Lone Ranger. The Masked Man, the beautiful stallion, faithful sidekick, Tonto. He rode into town, saved the day, leaving only a hint of who he was, that silver bullet. Well, one story about them lives on. The Lone Ranger and Tonto are camping in the desert. They pitch their tent, fall asleep, and some hours later, Tonto wakes his friend. Kemosabe, look up. What do you see? He replies, I see thousands of stars. Kemosabe, what does that mean? Well, Tonto, it means that there are hundreds of galaxies. It means that Saturn is in Leo. It means that it's about 3:15, anti-meridian. It means that God is all-powerful. What does it mean to you, Tonto? Kemosabe. It means someone stole our tent. We humans, you see, are meaning-making creatures. We experience an interaction, and from our beliefs, we conjure up meaning, often to our detriment. As we live into that meaning, our beliefs solidify. Then the law does what the law does. It works to fulfill our beliefs. So I want to give you a scenario. This is about an anonymous third person. I'm going to use the name you, not you, but some other you. Just makes it easier to tell. Maybe somebody walks by you in the narthex without speaking, without smiling, without even looking at you. You notice that. Then you do a dangerous thing. You think. And what you think is this. They don't like me. And of course, there's more. You interpret what just happened as something that they're doing to you. Then you misidentify your interpretation as your feelings. You confuse your thinking with your feelings. Your self-talk goes something like this. I feel ignored, I feel insulted, I feel rejected. This is code language for what your ego is shouting. They ignored you. They insulted you. They rejected you. You must retaliate now. So, automatically, you judge them. They're stuck up, self-centered, and rude. You become aware of increasing discomfort. So look at what is going on here. In the space of a few heartbeats, your ego has a new enemy to deal with. A convenient distraction to keep you from facing the real issue. So what is the real issue? Let's remember spiritual law. Because God is ever giving just what we believe, The real issue is your belief that you are not likable. Probably an unnoticed belief that has been affecting your interactions and relationships for a long time. Just take a deep breath, because there's some good news. Viktor Frankl reminds us, quote, between stimulus and response, there's a space. And that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and freedom. End of quote. So the person walking by without acknowledging you is the stimulus. What you make of that is your response. And the space in between lies your growth and freedom. Well, that sounds very promising. Well, there's bad news. This thing we call growth usually takes a while. Sometimes years of introspection, journaling, study, group work, spiritual practice, yoga, even therapy. Know anybody that's been working on their personal growth stuff for a while? Well, some good news. There is another way to freedom. It takes no longer than it takes for you to change your mind. Here is the way to freedom from John 8:32. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So I'll lay it out for you simply and directly. Beliefs are one thing, truth is another. We make up beliefs. Truth is absolute. So know this. The truth is, you are created in the image and likeness of God. You're already worthy. The truth is, God is good, so you're way good enough. The truth is, God is love. You are lovable and you're able to love. Jesus said it all. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Beliefs are subject to change. God is not. Truth is not. I wanted to share my story with you today so that you might understand the profound power of your story. The most important story ever told is the story that you tell yourself about who you are, who you believe you are. And if you aren't enjoying all the fruits of the kingdom, there's good news. It's never too late to change your story. Once upon a time, I believed that the moon was made of cheese. What a silly belief. Let us prepare for a few moments of quiet meditation. So I invite you to lay aside anything that may be in your way. And just relax with the intention of being present in this now moment. And let us take a deep breath together. As we acknowledge our oneness in spirit. Let go of the outer world, its busyness, its impermanence, its harsh need to change you. Turn within. Allow your mind to slow down. And just surrender. Breathe into the assurance that as we witness any error of thought about ourselves or another, we begin to reclaim the years that the locust has eaten. Breathe into the realization that no matter what we might make up in the heat of the moment about ourselves or another, the truth is we are lovable and worthy of belonging. So take another deep breath. Leave everything you know behind. Leave everything you know behind. Slip beneath the surface of thought and shift your awareness to your heart space. Surrender to the truth of your being. Allow that divine flow to take you deeper to the very core of your being, where love itself awaits your return. The love that created you, the love that sustains you, the love that knows itself as you. And rest in the heart of God in the silence. We are so grateful for the renewal of our mind, the renewal of our spirit. We acknowledge that we are here this morning by divine appointment, and we rejoice for one another as we grow in consciousness and receive the present good that is seeking us. And so it is. Amen.